Hello, everybody. With Richard Piper, I'm Bob Davis, and we welcome you to Basic Gospel, a media ministry dedicated to helping you hear, believe, and live the good news of Jesus Christ. We're live on the air and online right now, so if there's something you'd like to talk about or a Bible question we can answer for you, we invite your call now at 844-322-2742, same number you get in the U.S. and in Canada, 844-322-2742. So we are live right now. Of course, Richard, I really hope that our listeners are enjoying the Friday teaching series, because I know the three of us are. And, yes. Of course, when we have the teaching editions, the phone lines are not open, so it's not possible for our listeners to call and post those questions. So we are live. We're all live today, and we want you to call. Give us a call, 844-322-2742. That's why it is a live broadcast, so that you can get an immediate answer to your question or your particular circumstance. If you'd like to discuss it, we'd like to discuss it with you. So, again, 844-322-2742. That's good in the U.S. and in Canada. It is Basic Gospel, everybody. And, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Well, this month we are looking at the word reconciliation. It's one of those big $10 theological words, and yet it really is an important word. It doesn't occur that many times in the New Testament, but where it occurs is vital. And I want to take all week, by way of introduction, to look at one passage. And this is in the letter to the Colossians.
You're really going to make it last, huh?
I am. It's a fairly long passage, so we're going to split it into four parts. But I want to read the passage and then take the first part of it today. We're talking about Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. If you were listening to all of that, there were two uses of the word reconcile, and they're vital. But I wanted to read the whole thing and then split it into four parts on purpose, because this is one of those sections in Paul's letters that just really bring it all together. So I want to start today with verses 15 through 18. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. What does that have to do with reconciliation? Turns out that has everything to do with reconciliation. What Paul is doing here is showing verbally how important Jesus is. And there are some really interesting things there. He uses the phrase, he is the image of the invisible God. It's the Greek word. We have a word for it. It means icon, literally icon. And what this word means is that there is something that represents something else, but it assumes a prototype. It's not merely a resemblance, but it represents the thing from which it is drawn. Jesus is the image of the invisible God because he is the physical manifestation of a spiritual invisible God. Christ is everything. He was the firstborn over all creation. That means he is preeminent over all creation. He's not part of creation. He is the creator.
Yes.
Vital. That word creation means to produce something from nothing. Jesus isn't the unmoved mover. He is not the guy who started this off and then walked away just to see what would happen. Everything was made from nothing by him personally. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. This beginning is the word arc, like archetype. We have that word in English. It's the principal cause or originator. And he's firstborn again. He was firstborn over creation. Now he's firstborn over the dead, over anybody who's been resurrected. He's firstborn preeminent over death itself. And finally, the word supremacy. The only place in all the Bible that this word is used is right here in Colossians 1:18, and it indicates something that is not acquired. You know, it's not like I was born of the proper blood so I could be king, or I beat all of my rivals so I could be elected president. Mm-hmm. But he is inherently supreme by virtue of his nature. Jesus is supreme because of who he is, not because of what he's done, not because of what he's promising, none of that. Yeah. So when we get to the word reconciled tomorrow and on Wednesday, it is absolutely dependent upon this Jesus who is everything. He is first, he is last, he is creator, he is God himself. And if he's not all those things, then reconciliation is meaningless. So stay tuned. We'll talk about reconciliation tomorrow.
It's going to be exciting. This is a great topic. And friends, I hope you want to be a part of it. You can join the conversation right now. Call quickly, 844-322-2742. Richard Piper is here. My name is Bob Davis, and we welcome you again to the broadcast, Basic Gospel, 844-322-2742. Let's go to New York and talk to Veronica, listening on our great New York area affiliate, yes. WMCA. Veronica, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay. You know, I wasn't talking about what you were talking about because I just called first.
Oh, that's okay.
No problem.
Yeah, I apologize. The question is tithing. My husband supports his mother and family. There's brothers and nephews and all that stuff in another country, Dominican Republic. It's like clockwork. We get paid and they get supported, you know. And then I, you know, that money could be great for the tithing. Well, it's like, you know, but it all goes to them. I'm just saying that's like 10% and beyond sometimes. And so sometimes it's tight. And so I wonder, you know, I recently read something that Jesus overthrew the Pharisees and said, listen, you have to take care of your aged. And I'm like, and then I try to look for it all, you know, within the Bible, and I didn't really find it. But I, you know, I just, you know, read it, you know, something mm-hmm. of that nature because I, you know, Googled, et cetera. And I'm like feeling guilty if I don't do the right thing with my church, but yet I'm doing the right thing with my mother-in-law and my husband's family that have nothing.
Okay. It's a great question. It's a great topic, and there's no harm, no foul in bringing this up. It really does. It really is related to reconciliation. Because we have been reconciled, we owe God nothing.
Okay.
All right? So if you are able to pay tithe, we bless you, right? If you're able to pay it, that's great. Are you required to pay it? No, you're not. Okay? Tithing in the Old Testament under the Mosaic Covenant was done expressly to support the Levitical priesthood, the tribe of Levi. They had no inheritance
yes,
in the land
that.
And all of that. Okay.
The Orthodox Jewish now do learning. They're
yeah.
learning people. The
so,
same almost.
So the way we give now is described by Paul in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 about giving hilariously, by giving generously, by excelling in what he calls the grace of giving. Which immediately ties it to something outside of us. Grace is something that I don't have. I can only get grace if I am indwelled by the Holy Spirit, because the Holy Spirit is grace. Grace is not a thing. Grace is a person, Jesus Christ in the form of the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit is going to impress upon you and your husband, assuming you're together on this.
Yes, we are. We are.
Yeah. He's going to impress upon you to give where it's most needed.
Right.
And obviously supporting his family
right.
is very
well,
important.
Like 81.
Yeah. And so that's what you do. So one of the things you're referring to, and Jesus was really angry about this, is that
right.
There was a topic in the Mosaic Covenant called Korban, and you could declare something to be Korban or dedicated, and therefore it was given priority in your life as a gift to the temple or a gift to the priesthood. And what was happening in Jesus's day is that people were saying to their parents, I really wanted to help you out, but this money was declared Korban, and I can't. because now it belongs to God. And Jesus said, "Oh, just stop it." You know, let's get on. Yeah,
my poor mother-in-law, she worked frying whatever on the corner for years, and she can't stand right.
And so, what a privilege for you and your husband to give back to her
tiny bit of what she gave to him. Right. You know, she turned around and gave us an inheritance that we haven't been able to do anything with, which is so wonderful. We have like 50 acres of land over there. But,
wow.
You know, we've been robbed a couple of times from all the get-overs and all that stuff.
Yes.
But we have faith that the next go-round, it's going to be the big time. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah, so don't have any guilt over how much you give and where you give it. Walk by faith in where the Spirit is leading you to give, how much to give, how often to give. And I will guarantee you that if you are walking by faith and giving out of what the Spirit has given to you, mm-hmm. you are going to find yourselves able to give in ways that you never imagined, and not just with money, but in time and love and relationship and all the rest of it.
I have one more question.
Sure.
I did as much as I could this week, right? And my husband said to me, "You know what you have to do? Give to someone in the church that really needs it. You know, really, really needs it." And I, in addition to that, I mean, it was part of the tithe was that. And mm-hmm. the person just looked at me like, "Wow, you know, you can't imagine how I needed this." You know, and my church doesn't understand that concept yet. I don't know why, and I think I should become a member now. After just seeing her face, the way she reacted, she like $10 for 5 days. How's she going to do it?
Yeah.
You know,
so that's the blessing of giving,
mm-hmm.
right? You're giving to something specific, to someone specific for a very mm-hmm. specific need. Rather than just saying, "Here, sign over this portion of your check or whatever to this organization and trust us to do with it as we see fit." Now, many churches are absolutely honorable in the way they deal with their giving. I happen to attend one. It's a blessing. But not all are. And when you are walking by faith with the indwelling Jesus, you will be led to give properly to the right causes in the right amounts, and you never have to look back. There's no need to feel guilty. In fact, what you should be is thankful that you're able to have some resources to help out.
Terrific. Thank you. This is so clarified. I'm so happy. Thank you
so
much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome.
We're so glad you called, Veronica. I hope you hope this is a help, and if you have further questions.
I was really dizzy about it and upset because I thought I wasn't doing the right thing.
No need to be upset.
Right.
All right.
Be thankful.
Call us anytime. Great to hear from you. Plenty of open lines, 844-322-2742. That's good in the U.S. and in Canada, 844-322-2742. Richard, a big, big trip that the ministry hasn't sponsored in quite a number of years, and mm-hmm. that is Experience Israel, coming up February 7th through the 18th. And it's going to be the trip of a lifetime for so many people.
2017. Next year.
What did I say?
Just February. February.
Okay. Coming up last month. No, I'm just kidding. 2017. We invite you to join us for this, basically a life-changing time of teaching and worship on-site in Israel. I was there in 1997, and quite frankly, it was overwhelming. Because you hear the biblical stories, we've read them, many of us, since childhood and been taught them through the years, and you go to the sites and you see this entire panorama of biblical history unfolding in front of your eyes, and it's just amazing. There's just something very, very special about this, and we hope that many, many of our listeners, now we only can take 40
yes.
at this particular time, and we already have quite a number of folks that have signed up, so if you're planning to do this, we want you to make your plans immediately if you can, and what you need to do is, Basic Gospel Experience Israel Tour, February 7th through the 18th, 2017. I can't read that. You need to read that for
the
me, Richard.
The deposit to reserve your space, the deposit has to be in before June 1st.
Before June 1st.
Of this year. Okay. So you've got a couple of more months.
Yeah, yeah.
And when the 40 spaces are gone, they're gone.
So a deposit,
what an opportunity.
Yeah. So a deposit by June 1st, and then we'll take care of the rest of it as we go.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But it's an incredible opportunity, friends. So hope you'll take advantage of it. It's going to be just a fantastic time. Well, again, 844-322-2742, a toll-free call in the U.S. and in Canada, 844-322-2742. Louisville, Kentucky, let's talk to Mary Jo, listening on a great affiliate, WFIA. Hi, friend Mary Jo, good to hear from you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like your opinion on this. I had a friend, and she was a Christian friend. She said she thought sometimes when a baby died and went to heaven, if God wanted to, he could grow up that little baby, and that baby could decide whether it wanted God or not. Don't you think when they get to heaven that that would be such an automatic?
Yes. There is nothing in the Bible that talks about what happens to babies when they die. There are some hints, but what we're left with is that we serve a perfectly loving and perfectly just God. And so rather than deal with any particular little aspect, couch it in those terms. Our God is perfectly loving and perfectly just. He knows exactly what to do with each child that comes to him. And I'm glad that he's the one making that decision, that I'm not the one making the decision. Because we all know that babies are born spiritually dead. All of us were born spiritually dead. So there's nothing inherent about a baby that makes them savable. But God knows whether they've had, at whatever age, whether they've had the chance to meet Jesus, to choose Jesus, to believe, or whether there was just never any option at all. I think of this particularly in terms of this incredibly bad thing that our country practices so much in abortion. Those babies never had a chance, and yet they are completely human beings. I thank God that he knows about them and that he does exactly the right thing with them. Now, my assumption, and it's kind of a romantic notion, my assumption is that a child who never had a chance to meet Jesus or anything else is saved. God takes them home, and they become whatever God brings them up to be. But in terms of getting to heaven, where God is, and growing up and then being faced with a choice of whether to be saved or lost, no, that's not biblical. That's impressing our ideas on God rather than letting God impress his ideas on us. And so I would just trust that God knows best, and he is dealing with those infants and children who've never had a chance to meet him in absolutely a perfect way, a way that brings joy to heaven, would bring joy to us when we find out later on at the end of time when we all get together with Jesus. But I wouldn't worry about this too much. God just knows what he's doing.
Does that help, Mary Jo?
It does a little bit. It's just sad, though, that a child didn't get a chance to experience life here on Earth. And some little baby that I'm talking about was abused, and I won't go into it, but
yes.
Anyway.
I think, again, the Bible doesn't prove this, but I think our God would take a child like that and bring them home and just love them in a way that they've never been loved.
I agree.
There's nothing to worry about. And quite frankly, although it's sad because those of us who are left never got a chance to watch this baby grow up and become an adult and all of that, there is nothing really to be gained by growing up in our world. Those of us who are here get a chance to walk by faith in Jesus Christ, and he gives us strength to go through what we go through. But this world is no one's friend. And even though there are some very beautiful things and beautiful people and all of that, any place we see beauty is purely the result of God's initiative, not the result of man's effort. And so I wouldn't mourn for the child who doesn't get to grow up, but I certainly would mourn for their parents, even if the parents were abusive, because it's the parents who cause that pain. It's the parents who get to live with the pain and the guilt of what they've done, and they need Jesus. They need to meet Jesus and somehow come to a saving belief in him so that they can realize that even that kind of stuff is forgiven in him. That's the important point.
Mary Jo, glad you called, and I hope you keep listening and call again. Let's go to New Rochelle, New York, and talk to Bill. Bill, welcome to the broadcast. He's listening, of course, on WMCA as well.
Okay.
Yes, good afternoon. I don't believe in the supernatural. I'm an agnostic.
Okay.
I'm along the lines of Bart Ehrman and company. And I would like to know is that what makes you think you got an authentic original gospel?
What makes you think we don't?
Well, because as we know, the gospel authors, Mark, Luke, John, and Matthew, they weren't the original writers of the gospels.
Why weren't they?
Because it was passed down through generations. It was passed down through, and first of all, the gospels were written by illiterate Greeks, while in Jesus' community there were illiterate Greeks there.
Okay. So if I were, is there any answer I could give you that would help you believe, or are you just wanting to have a conversation?
No, I think it's foolish to believe in Jesus Christ and to believe in the supernatural while we really have no proof. There's no way you could prove that Jesus Christ was God.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do. We'll talk a little bit about this, but I'm not going to argue with you. You're free to believe what you want to believe. Okay. The New Testament, among other things, is probably the most highly vetted collection of writings in the history of ever. There are more manuscripts, more demonstrations that these manuscripts are reliable than any other book from antiquity. It's just a fact. Okay, you can choose not to believe that if you want. That's fine with me. The one of the issues that actually affected me early in my belief was that there were differences among the writers between Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And then I realized that what we were reading were eyewitness accounts. And of course there would be differences in what the eyewitnesses saw and how they interpreted it. The miracle to me of the Bible is that this disparate collection of people, some of them very highly educated, some of them not educated at all, some of them from Jewish backgrounds, some of them not. The fact that the topics hold together as well as they do, and they do hold together, is just amazing. I believe it's a miracle. Again, if I collected this many writers today and asked them to write a book on philosophy or on mathematics or on, you know, pick your topic, it would be almost impossible to get them to agree, and they're all sitting around the table. These writers agree, and it happened over several thousand years, both Old Testament and New Testament. So I believe there's more than enough evidence, if you're willing to look at it, for the veracity of the New Testament. And it does come down to a matter of, will you accept imperfect information about its history, or do you have to have absolutely all knowledge all the time? And if that's the way you're living your life, you are very disappointed in many, many topics. You can't know everything. So you have to accept something at some point that represents what you're willing to believe. And I for one, think that the New Testament, with thousands, well over 5,000 manuscripts, again, is the most highly vetted work of authorship in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And is absolutely trustable.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Richard, for that. Bill, hope you're listening, and hope this has been meaningful for you. Folks, getting the word out, when you partner with Basic Gospel, it's just what you do. We love sharing that Jesus is alive, offering his love, grace, and life, and his forgiveness. And we hear calls practically every day from people seeking clarity and truth. You know, that's the main reason to give through Basic Gospel. But for your gift of any amount this month, you'll receive a copy of Bob Christopher's CD and study guide, Reconciled for Life. Click donate on any page at basicgospel.net. Or donate by phone at 844-412-2742. Again, 844-412-2742. Make your gift today and keep the good news coming. Thanks to Richard, and we'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll join us for that edition of Basic Gospel. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.